Did you ever read any David Sedaris?
No.
He's so funny. He talks about, you know, his mom had one of their pets put down at one point because she had a kind of cancer and everything. And he and his sister, you know, of course, Amy Sedaris, he and David Sedaris, completely weird. They apparently were so angry at their mother, they would make up these fake flyers to be delivered. It's like, hey, guess what? Here's this new treatment for this cancer that would have totally cured, you know, just to torture her a little bit. But his mom was always a good person. And then years and years later, he had to have his cat put down and had it cremated, and he was completely broke. And his mom sent him a check for it. It's like, no, don't worry, it's fine. But in the little memo area at the bottom for what it was for, she said, pet burning.
Listen to Comic Issues, your favorite geeky podcast full of rants, ramblings, and ravings. I am your host, Anthony Sobel. Along with me is my co-host and greatest geek in the world,
Elizabeth Wallace.
Boom, shakalaka.
Yeah.
One shot. I didn't fuck it up.
Catherine and I had the awfulest time on, like, the last binary system. We just couldn't get the start. It's a lot harder than it looks. I'll say that right now.
It is. The problem is that it's not just, oh, like, It's not like it's in my head. Hmm. Like, going up, I just take a moment of silence for both audio and myself.
Yes.
And then I go into it. It's never like I'm worried about it. I've been doing it for fucking 4 years. I've done this specific one.
Yeah.
I've done for over 100 podcasts.
Oh, easily,
right?
Easily. I mean, I think you were doing it when I first started on it. So that's, I started in like the number 60s.
Somewhere around,
so, yeah, exactly.
It's just, you stumble, your tongue kind of falls out of your mouth,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're like, ah, shit, now I gotta do it again.
It's way worse after the second flub, too, because now you're trying too
now,
hard.
Now you're like, in your head.
Yeah, now you're nervous.
So, yeah. So, welcome.
Welcome.
We don't know any other way to start this podcast.
Nope. We could do it like the Nerdist, but then they would totally accuse us of stealing it, so, you know.
Yeah, I don't know, like, it's some of the like, we, because then we would have to find, okay, where's the front of the podcast?
Yeah, and we were honestly having, before you guys came in, we were having the weirdest conversation about serial killers, I guess, and,
yeah,
and pieces of art and the strange things,
yeah,
and it's maybe not the happiest start to the podcast. So,
this
yeah
is the question Elizabeth posed to me.
Yeah.
If I had to take either a painting made by John Wayne Gacy.
Yes.
Or murder tools,
yes,
from John Wayne Gacy, which would you take? Because on one hand, you have a painting that he lovingly crafted with all of his crazy, and it has to stare at you from your wall.
Yeah.
Or you have, like, a set of knives or something.
Yeah.
I don't know the specifics.
I don't either.
Did he eat people?
I can't remember. I really don't. Because I thought that about, too. I was like, well, did he kill them with knives, or was he one of the strangling ones?
No.
I don't remember.
I know he's the clown one.
Yeah, I know, but I don't remember what he used. And
did
I'm
he choke them with balloons?
He may have. That would just be, he beat them to death with his giant-ass shoes.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know? So like we said, sometimes the pre-podcast conversations go into very strange places,
yeah,
but that's okay.
I went with painting.
Yeah, I think I would have to go with painting as well.
The other ones, they're both creepy.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
one, I think, is measurably creepier than the other.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff you guys miss out
on. Have a cheerful start to this podcast. Yeah. Woo!
That's why we have an intro.
That's exactly right. So we can be like, here's where we start behaving, yes, ourselves.
Now we know.
Now.
So, in light of relatively light comic book news, there's stuff kind of out there, some very small things, some things we've talked about a little bit, but we've decided that this podcast is all comic books.
Yeah.
Beginning to end.
Yep.
The stack that we put between us to talk about that we rarely get to the bottom of.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll get to the bottom of today.
You never can tell.
So, this week we start with Marvel Zombies number 2, which has been a favorite of ours.
Yeah, for the very first book really grabbed me. I'm still sort of surprised that it's not Bendis writing it, because the quippiness and the clever dialogue is right in his wheelhouse. But this character, Elsa, I just think she's amazing. She's wonderfully sarcastic and trying to live up to her father's legacy, even though her father was an asshole.
Even
and she
hates it.
Yeah, exactly. But she's still this part of her that's still trying to win his approval, but then there's a part of her, I think, who's acting like a human being to spite him, sort of.
It seems... She seems hardwired to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure if I would necessarily say she's trying to emulate or make her assumably dead father proud. It's that she was just so regimented as a child that she spits out his lines without thinking about it. And she does that several times in this book. Cy Spurrier and Kev Walker are the brains of this book. Cy Spurrier doing all the... Like, you're right. It's like Bendis-esque kind of dialogue, especially when you have the witty, sarcastic heroine of Elsa Bloodstone.
Yeah. And, you know, they even some of the asides, you know, she says something incredibly sarcastic. Here's this kid who doesn't know anything about himself, really doesn't know anything about anything, but she says this just this line dripping with sarcasm, and he says something like, "You're doing that thing that doesn't mean what you're saying again." And she's like, "Yeah, sarcasm, look it up." But it's wonderful to look at and it's wonderful to read.
She's a well-balanced character because she is both uncaring and still very thoughtful.
Yeah, yeah.
Like she's not devoid of compassion, but
she's been taught that compassion is for the weak.
Yeah. Yeah. She has to put the sassy sarcasm out first.
Yep, yep.
And then some sarcasm or some compassion can slip out.
Yeah, I mean, in the scenes of her with her father, I mean, at one point he's coughing, her father is coughing up blood, and she actually kind of is like showing him some sympathy or pity, and he shoves her back and everything, he's stomping away, and as she's sitting on the ground, she says, "I hate you," and he hears it, and she's like, I'm sorry, and he's like, "No, it's the first impressive thing you've said all day." I mean, that's her dad, that's the right there.
So that's kind of built into her background.
Yeah.
I really like the outside of these two characters, the kind of weirdness that, I mean, we're in the Marvel zombie world, and the Marvel zombie book written by Robert Kirkman was not without its humor and kind of funny situations.
Yeah.
And so Spurrier is really, I think, grabbing on to some of that. And I found it funny in the beginning of the book, Elsa's working into the mechanics of a MODOK, a zombie MODOK, who I guess he's just become paralyzed. He can't float or anything, and he's got these little legs.
Yeah.
He's pretty much helpless.
Yeah.
And she's just digging into his brain, and he's, of course, alive and still talking.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of some of the dialogue he says I found to be pretty entertaining. And, I mean, it's one thing to be heartless against a child. That you're kind of like, hey, you're being mean.
Yes.
But it's funny when it's against a zombie.
Exactly. There's this one point when he's like, Lego, cadavers aren't consent. And I'm like, we were just talking about cosplay isn't consent.
Yeah.
So it was awesome.
Do you know what MODOK stands for?
No.
Mechanism? I have balls. I had half of it when I asked you, and now I don't know.
It's the K is for killing, right?
Killing, yeah. It's to the effect of mechanism only designed for killing. Something like that. So they play with that. He says, when she calls him Captain Bollockhead, he says, morbid organism designed only for cannibalism.
Oh, nice.
I thought that was pretty funny.
That was pretty funny.
And he has another fun line.
When she kicks
him
off the cliff.
Yeah, indignity alarm. That was funny.
You know, and the art was so good in that because they see this figure in the distance and she, you know, as soon as she sees him, she doesn't trust him. So she ends up kicking the MODOK cadaver off this cliff. And what it does is, it's very clear in the picture, it flips itself end over end and runs into the thing and explodes. But it's really well drawn. You can actually see all the motion involved when it goes flop, 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 boom. You know, it was very neat.
Yeah. She uses MODOK to essentially destroy this pathway that more zombies could come through and chasing after. Because they're still way, way, way deep behind the lines.
And going in the opposite direction. They're like 200 miles away, going in the opposite direction.
But it's still an enjoyable book. And the aspects of Battleworld that, you know, we say every podcast that has been really kind of grabbing is what it's like on the other side of the wall.
Yep.
What happens when someone defies the word of doom.
Yep.
Like these books are kind of the most interesting, and I'm still really into what we're gonna find once we get deeper you know, if we reach the South.
And the once again, the cracks are showing in the seams of Battleworld, where they notice two flyers, and it's both the same person, mm-hmm. but both zombified, and the kid asks about that, and what she said, what is it, like duplicates?
The Dupler effect?
The Dupler effect.
Something like that.
She said because there's all these worlds in Battleworlds, and there's millions of zombies, and sometimes, she says, coincidences happen. And the kid's like, well, didn't you ever wonder why? So that's why she's familiar with the idea that you might see two Cyclopses or, you know, two Doc Ocks or whatever, because with all the people that exist in duplicate forms in this world, it's entirely possible that two of them might become zombies and stay over in the zombie world. And she just accepts that. But the kid is just like, yeah, but why? So it's, we're really... This is the first time, I think, in these books that we saw that questioning, kind of, why is the world the way it is?
Yeah, and, like, there's very little to go on, but clearly this little kid is important for some reason.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll eventually come around to that. But I did like the revelation at the end. Of course, fucking spoilers for everything, guys. Is that zombies have captured Deadpool and are feeding on his brain, which is self-regenerating.
Yeah.
And this doesn't look like a zombie Deadpool. This looks like a regular Deadpool.
It really does.
So there's a pack of zombies who are really, they really got their shit going because they are well fed.
Yeah, exactly. And they've been feeding on brains, which I guess that's the only thing they want to eat. It's not like walkers, where walkers actually, like in The Walking
Dead.
They
will eat anything, but they're really after them brains.
Okay, so here's the other thing. In this world, have they established, can you get contaminated by a zombie and turn into a zombie? How do people become zombies
bites.
In this world? It is bites.
I'm nearly positive it's bites.
Okay, all right. That makes sense.
So Marvel Zombies... good time, fun book. That
probably one of my favorite books this week. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's, I mean, are we ever going to really get tired of zombies? We say we will.
Well, you know, and some people do. Like, my brother-in-law, Nathan, refuses to have anything to do with any of the zombie thing because it's just so prevalent right now. But I don't know. I think if you cut it all out, you miss out on things like Marvel Zombies. Yeah. You miss out on things like Walking Dead. I'm like, I know it's zombies, but it's really good.
Like, so. clearly they're still bad. Zombies done badly.
Yeah. Well, it's the reason why zombies and vampires are so interesting is because you have the possibility of somebody that you know and recognize walking around, but it's not them anymore. So you can play with that idea for years and years to come. That's
the whole thing just never
horrific.
Dies.
No. It really doesn't. I see what you did there. That was very clever.
Because there's zombies and vampires.
You actually did like the meme dog face too.
I call it Drew face.
Oh, you know what? That's true too. That's very, because he does that. Yes, he does.
He does
love him some puns.
I mean, there's a movie coming out, or is an independent release, called Cooties. Have you seen that?
No.
It's it takes place in an elementary school where all the kids become zombies.
Okay.
Because there's some kind of contamination in the food. Okay. And they very specifically, it's in the trailer, that you can't contract the disease if you've gone through puberty.
Oh, interesting.
So it's literally just the children who become zombies and are chasing after the staff. And the staff is Elijah Wood, Rainn Wilson. There's a handful of other, like, funny people. It's a comedic... zombie flick.
Now, the best part would be the way to inoculate if they actually do. Just like, hold your arm. Circle, circle, dot, dot. Now you got the cootie shot. There you go. The day is saved.
Yay! I wanted to try and see it at Comic-Con. They had a screening, but I just, one of the many things I missed out on.
It was too much to do this year. There really was.
I mean, what's missing? If not zombies, like, clearly something has to take its place. Hey, what's the next horror craze, you think?
I don't know. I mean, I've been loving watching the different genres go through. I mean, vampires were huge for a while.
Yeah.
We've been in zombies for a while. Obviously, this year is the year of the spy movies. I mean, starting with Kingsman, Man from U.N.C.L.E., Spy, you know, all these movies. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing. So I don't know. That's a good question. What's the next monster that's going to take everybody's fancy?
Do you think Star Wars will kick off another kind of run of space flicks?
That could be it, too. The space horror movies are always a good bet.
Or just space flicks in general. Mm. Like, just the next genre to pick up.
Maybe. That's true. We really haven't seen, Interstellar. Did you ever see Interstellar?
No, not yet.
I've been hearing it's good, but a lot of people who said it was good, it's like, it's good, but you only need to watch it once. And I'm like, yeah. Means it's an investment in time.
Yeah.
No, maybe that'll be the next thing that picks up. You know, I was just thinking, you know, like, whether it's horror movies or regular ones, alien movies are always a fun time. So.
We have the new Independence Day flick coming out next year, I think.
I forgot about that.
That's going to happen.
Be okay with that one, you know, yeah. Mostly because I liked the original one, but I'm not tied to it. Like, that came out almost the same time as Men in Black, so, you know.
Yeah, like, it's just another popcorn flick.
No,
like, there's
exactly.
No emotional attachment
no.
to it.
No, so if you want to do another one in that series, I'm like, fine, but yeah. I remember when they first started doing the Men in Black sequels, I was like, oh, don't touch that one. That one was so perfect in the original.
And it wrapped up, I've had a big problem with the Men in Black, because the first Men in Black wraps up in a way where we're another marble in a world even larger than our own.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, what a kind of cute way to wrap up this film, because yes. The whole film's about finding the marble with a little galaxy in it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, that's cool. And then we have a next one. I'm like, okay, more aliens. It's
fine.
Not weird. Yeah. But then it wraps up with, oh, we're all in a locker somewhere. I'm like, no. One or the other.
No.
We can't be both.
Yeah, the marble was such a much cooler idea than the locker.
Well,
and
me too.
That car agreed with this too. Damn stupid lockers.
It's too hot to close the window, guys.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe space is the next genre that's gonna pick up.
I could see it.
Maybe we get another Serenity movie. I'm doubtful, but...
Doubtful, yeah.
Man can dream.
And he's not doing another Avengers movie, so he maybe has a little more time now.
Perhaps
so.
No more Marvel movies ever again.
Yeah, you know, from the way he talked about it, that could be a possibility. Yeah. So, yeah.
Did you happen to sneak into his Hall H panel?
No, I didn't.
I'm curious what went on there.
Well, you talked about the new comic book that's coming out, which is like Victorian...
Batman. Lady Victorian Batman.
Yeah. So, and I'm like, I'm in. Yeah. You know, that's good. I'm good.
That one will appear on the podcast.
Yes, it will. Definitely.
Yeah. More books. Uncanny X-Men number 35. This is the book, the second to last Bendis book.
Sure, that's fine.
After this, it's Uncanny X-Men 600.
So we're going from 35 to 600.
Yes.
Why?
Because they've been keeping track. And this would have been the original Uncanny X-Men 600.
Have the villain and the Slayer been talking about how much that ticks them off?
Probably.
They hate it when they change the number, because it makes it so hard to organize.
Yeah. This one I really liked. I'd kind of forgotten where we left off, because this book has been getting very sporadic, and I'm so wrapped up with Secret Wars stuff.
And this is not a Secret Wars book.
This is completely
back in the regular world.
Going the other way. And I think we still have to wait a couple months before we get to 600. Mm-hmm. But this was just kind of where we left off with Scott's young pupils and the new X-Men.
Right.
I remember at the end of the last book, they're like, well, what do we do from here? We have this training. We don't want to go back to our old lives, but we're not X-Men.
Right.
And we don't want to be X-Men.
Right.
We're going to do our own thing. So, you know, that's essentially what they do. And, Gold Balls of anybody becomes a popular meme.
He does. I like how he always says Gold Balls when he fires stuff off, and the text is always like in this like logo type treatment and everything. And they're like, Fabio, stop saying that. Okay, what else would we call them other than Gold Balls?
I'm sure there was a better name out there.
I'm sure there is. He even didn't want them to call him that at first, but now he's like.
But it wasn't until some characters from the future came, and they're like, oh my god, that's Gold Balls.
Nice.
That's when he really jumped on board with the name.
Yep. And he does, you know, he's been doing well, but somebody got him totally realistically in the middle of a battle. Somebody got him on the camera on their phone, and the video went viral, and he ends up on The Tonight Show, and covers in magazines, and the line that I loved, you know, because whenever he sets these little gold balls out, they go poink. And so he's like always poink, 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 poink. And the cover of the magazine says, poink is the new thwip. That's meta. It really is really very
like you
meta.
Can only, like, yeah, that works in Marvel.
It totally does. Absolutely.
I liked when he was on some kind of Good Morning America with Regis and whomever.
Yes.
There's the woman on the show, the co-host. She's like, wow, this is heavy. He goes, yeah, well, it's real gold.
Yeah.
Which is one thing I think we all assumed, but we weren't completely sure.
Yep.
Because once you're like, oh, he makes gold balls, like, why aren't they rich? It immediately follows up, but it only lasts, and before you can even finish the sentence, it goes boink, yep. and disappears. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that also explains why the world isn't littered by all these gold balls everywhere.
Every time they get done with a fight, you may see one or two lying around, but not for very long. So yeah. It was a nice explanation.
Like, good. I thought maybe the artist was getting lazy or something. Mm-hmm. Like, just to have to keep track of all those is kind of bonkers.
What Spidey's webs, they dissolve after a little bit, don't they?
Yes, they're supposed to dissolve after, I think, like a couple hours.
I just remember an old episode. Was it Spider-Man and Friends, where he's traveling around with Firestar and...
And his amazing friends.
Yeah, but it was Firestar and Iceman, I guess.
Yeah, Iceman and Firestar.
They'd had the middle of this big battle at one point, and then the police pull Spidey and Iceman aside because there's, like, the ice slides that he makes all over the place, and while the policeman's yelling him, Firestar comes behind and melts all of the little things, and then it's like, well, I don't know what you're talking about, so...
That still turns into a bunch of water.
It does, but that's better than, like, ice slides. Though, that would be pretty... Can you imagine walking to an area? It's like, oh, Iceman's been here. This is cool.
And you know, like, kids are just climbing them up.
Oh,
just,
yeah. Whee! That's exactly
and
it.
That ain't safe, because no. Some of those ice slides are getting nutty.
They don't have, like, a lip on the edge, either. You can totally fall off the side.
It's impressive he stays on.
Yeah, it's true. But he's been doing it for a long time.
Maybe he stays on, like if you lick something that, like, metal pole that's cold.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he somehow... freezes himself to it and then just kind of moves himself.
He's got, like, the whole idea of, like, he can do, like, a downward slide, and then he uses the momentum to swoop him up another one and then go around. It's all self-propelled. He's got that whole physics thing really well down.
He's got to figure it out, pro skater.
That's damn straight. Yeah.
Like, working the half pipe.
That's right.
Mountain Dew.
Do him and
Radical.
Silver Surfer hang out at all?
It's all the surfing characters.
Yeah, seriously.
Iceman, Silver Surfer. Who else has similar modes of transportation?
Frozone. But
Frozone.
Frozone's ice skating, but yeah, he's in
there too. Super suit. There's got to be somebody else out there. Yeah. I feel there's more.
Legolas in Lord of the Rings, which was dumb.
Yeah, Legolas seems to be able to surf on anything.
That was dumb.
Stupid. Did you ever watch Hobbit? I know last time we talked about hadn't.
Yeah, I watched the first one, and then I just never have any interest in any of the rest. So.
Okay.
There's been only just one more, right?
There's three.
Oh, okay. That shows how much interest I've had in them, so yeah.
But was it the first one... Or no, the second one has the river scene that I talked to you about.
Oh, yeah.
And you still haven't seen that?
No. Okay. And I was like, that's the one where they're going, like, basically whitewater rafting down the river.
Yeah, down in buckets, and they're jumping on orcs' heads and stuff like that. Yeah,
because in the book, they're just sealed in the barrel. So I admit that's not really good filmmaking right there, but that's...
it's like, a short scene, yeah.
Yeah.
And for some reason, they have to be 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Yeah. Whatever.
but in the X-Men book, it was very... If this was a Joss Whedon written book, Gold Balls would be totally dead.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because the book is so primarily about him enjoying this fame that he has, and the people are loving him, and he at one point says, you know, I'm very proud of myself, I'm a chunky Mexican kid and all this, and it seems all very cool. And then his family says that he's a mutant, and the world... got weird.
Apparently nobody thought it through. He's a guy who creates gold balls automatically. He's a mutant. I guess maybe they were thinking in terms of Captain America.
The big X on his chest wasn't really giving him... Because they didn't change their costumes.
No, they didn't.
They have all been seen cruising with Scott Summers.
Yes.
I don't know why, like, somebody turned and be like, oh, he's a mutant. Why?
Yeah, and then the, you know, racist comments start, and it immediately, everybody turns against him and throwing...
And they throw a bottle that, like, sticks into his neck.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was an uncomfortable scene. Yeah. He's got a shard of glass pulling out, and Triage is just like, you have to pull the glass out or else the healing is going to make it worse. But you're right. If it was Joss Whedon, dead.
Yeah,
that
would have been it. Because it felt very Joss Whedon, because he's such a lovable character that... The face he has when the glass is sticking out of his neck, like, reading, it was like, oh, no.
Yeah, he's done for.
He's dead.
And you know what? It wasn't until, and spoilers, it wasn't until you see them all walking up to the mansion, and thank God, you know, Triage managed to save him, even though Triage was even like, oh, no, and I'm like, ah, that's good, No, apparently he saved him, it's fine.
It felt like an editorial change at the last minute.
It might have been, but what I
because he looked legit dead.
Yeah, he really did. But what got me was up until they're all stumbling up to the front of the X mansion, mm-hmm. basically telling Storm, we thought we could handle this, but we can't handle this. And can we apply? And she's like, yeah, come on in. And up until that point, I thought it might have all been a daydream sequence. From the moment his video went viral, everything else that happens, the covers of the magazines and the Tonight Show, yeah.
Untold amount of time between A and B.
I really thought he was just, and that his brain was following it through to its logical conclusion. And then after we saw, like, the bottle sticking out of his neck and he's saying, oh no, he's dead, we would flip back to that moment with the viral thing and be like, I don't know, guys, I don't think this is any good. We probably shouldn't do this. This is going to go to a bad place. But no, it really all
Patrick
actually
Duffy
happened.
Turns in the shower.
Seriously, right? No. Apparently not. That Marvel didn't want to do that, which I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
that's fine.
I mean, change or not, Storm still got her bitch face.
Yeah, it's, well, she did.
What is going on with her?
I don't know.
I think you're the one who brought this to light to me, that Storm just seems to be acting real.
She's really,
curt,
she's
real
angry
mean.
All the time. Yeah. She really is. And it was, I forget which book it was. It wasn't Uncanny and it wasn't All New. It might have been the X-Ladies book, which is just uh-huh. X-Men. Think? I'm not sure. Or was there one where she was traveling around with Colossus and those people? Wasn't there another?
Amazing?
I think so. It was the X book that I didn't read very much. And I read like one issue. I'm like, Storm is angry at everyone and this is not fun to read. So,
yeah, because she has no reason to be. Like,
no.
Ever since Axis,
yeah.
Like she never quite seemed to have shaken the inversion.
Yeah.
But we saw she was inverted.
Yeah.
She was inverted back. She's supposed to go back to Storm, like the poet, you know, poetry spouting, you know, hippie goddess of the weather.
Nope.
Like
still angry.
Yeah, still.
Is the Storm single book still a thing?
No, it's canceled.
Oh wow, how did that long that last? Like 3 issues?
No, it went a little bit. Mm. I think it got up to 10 or 12.
I was surprised. I like the character, but I read one issue. I'm like, I'm not interested in this.
I think to me, Storm is like a Gambit character, like really strong in a team.
Yes.
But solo, like, what story do you tell about Storm?
Yeah.
Like, oh, the polar ice caps are melting.
Nah.
Call in Storm.
Nah. Did you see the picture that we got for the 3 Storm cosplayers?
Yeah,
they looked
great.
Awesome. They looked really good.
Really,
and they had their poses ready, too. That was awesome.
I saw the punk rock Storm later.
Oh, nice.
And I didn't even know until I went through your pictures that there was 3 of them.
Right.
Man, that's awesome.
Well, she had her mohawk,
oh, that mohawk,
but it looked
was
great.
Huge.
It was awesome. It looked wonderful.
Yeah, legit. Yep. So to flip to the other side of the pond, which I don't know why I keep referring it to that way, like
it makes
it's English
sense.
In some way.
Well, it's like separation of church and state. I don't know. You know, let's not cross the streams on this one. So,
on to the great white north, or I don't know, whatever.
Whatever.
Cyborg number 1 came out just this past week as part of a series of other books that we'll be releasing focused on singular characters mm-hmm. who, some of them, their original creators, are coming back to go back at them. And in other instances, are writers like David Walker, who has written the Shaft comic book, several books and articles about black culture, is writing Cyborg number 1.
Yep.
Which, again, Cyborg to me has been one of those characters great on a team, but solo, it seems like there's kind of only one way you're ever really going to go, and it's always fighting other robots
or
and stuff like that.
Or kind of lamenting the fact that he's, and he even used the words more machine than man, and I'm like, a nice Star Wars reference in there, but that is always seems to be Cyborg's, like, I'm happy that I'm alive. It's kind of kick-ass to be powerful, but I don't always feel like a human being. But that, we've heard that note so many times.
Sure.
But you got an interview with the creators on this one, didn't you?
It's up on the website. You guys can check it out. I got to speak with David Walker regarding the book. And in the interview, before I ever read the book, it was very clear that he had a direction that he wanted to go. And it was that direction is about Vic Stone, not Cyborg, not about whatever villains you can get him to fight. And he's not really looking to bring a lot of other people through the book. He just wants to talk about a young man who got turned into a cyborg, that got turned into, you know, a robot. Like he was saying, which I found interesting and I never thought about it before, Cyborg isn't a code name. It's not his alter persona.
Nope.
And it's not necessarily what he calls himself. It's this thing that the world calls him.
Right.
So, like, that he wanted that to be the focus. And in number one, I feel he really held to it. It's about Vic Stone, about his problems with his father, Silas, about him dealing with, you know, as tropey as it kind of is, am I, you know, a man? Am I a machine? Right. Where do I fit in? Because I can't go out like normal people.
Right. And it really is a good jumping on point for the character.
Yeah.
Because they delivered, when you get right down to it, if you think back on it, they delivered a lot of exposition in this book, but it wasn't clunky.
It didn't feel heavy.
It's hard to do that when you're just like, this is who I am, this is what happened to me, my relationship with my father, what's happened to me recently and everything. They give you all that, but it flows really well. Yeah. I was actually impressed with that.
Like, he kind of goes through the last, lightly the last four years of the New 52 history with Cyborg. And he's like, I died, and then I came back, and then I died again, and I came back. And it's written really well to kind of catch you up if you're curious about, if you haven't been following Justice League. Like, there's a whole point of Justice League books I own but haven't read.
Right.
But apparently his second death or something was in, so I was kind of in the air about that. I saw it, I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll go and check that out. Like, it gives you enough to be like, oh, maybe this is good, without deterring from the main focus of the book.
And I guess he would say the A storyline is what's going on with him, that his implants or whatever are changing. They can modify a lot more quickly, I guess.
It's a lot like, you know, Cyborg got an upgrade.
Exactly.
But he doesn't know where the upgrade kind of came from.
And he's dealing with the fact that his dad thinks this is all very fascinating, but it's the only time his dad is ever going to take any interest in him is studying what's happening.
He's studying him and not knowing who his son is.
Right. He said something like, you know, I was turned into my dad's greatest experiment. You know, yeah, it's true. But then I guess the B storyline is some battle that's going on between cyborg-like creatures out in space someplace. Yeah. So
what will eventually catch up in either the second, if not the third issue, is that somewhere in space are these kind of techno-organic creatures that some other army, which I kind of feel we're supposed to know who they were.
How is it? Because you've got the alien cyborg creatures, and then you've got the other ones, which do look like human beings in cyborg, kind of, and they're fighting against it. Like, one was called Tech Killers, and the other one was called Tech Sapiens, I guess. I can't remember.
Something like that.
Yeah,
and so clearly that's kind of where we're going to go to, because once the tech monsters absorbed one of the humans or implanted into him, I guess they got a taste of cyborg technology?
I guess. But it made the humans become not human anymore. I felt like that's what they were setting up. They're like, this could happen to Cyborg too. You know, his implants could take control of him and he becomes completely machine. So
yeah, he has no control over his body.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I put a review in with the interview, and I said in there that it was nice that this book was clearly trying to tell the story about a character.
Yes.
And not just move a character through some big bombastic, you know, storytelling.
Exactly.
Of just fights on fights. Like, right.
And we got enough action in there that if you're worried about it being like a character-driven thing, no, there's definitely some action in there.
It's got some fights and some action beats, but I do feel that it's a very relatable story, and that he's making Cyborg a very relatable character, even if your parents aren't scientists who don't know you.
Right, right, right.
I think everybody, and I think this is a really good book for teenagers.
Yes, yes.
I think everyone at some point in their life can relate to a time when they weren't seeing eye to eye with their parents.
Right.
Or they didn't think their parents were understanding them.
Right.
And that's the part I really liked about this book.
Yeah. They talked about what would be worse, to be stared at because it's fascinating, or to be looked away from because it's uncomfortable, or to be ignored completely? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of teenagers can kind of identify with that. A lot of people can identify with that. So.
I mean, I I got into this because David Walker is the one who wrote the Howard the Duck and Blade story over in the Marvel.
Yeah.
So, like, once that happened, I'm like, okay, what else is this guy gonna do?
Yeah, he can write a good story.
Yeah, so that was fun. So, yeah, I definitely, you know, like, personally, I think Cyborg's a book worth checking out. Mm-hmm. Another book that I thought I might never really read, Archie. And I'm not jumping in on Archie number whatever million.
No.
Because it's been going on forever. A reboot of the Archie, which has been talked about for a while, in a new contemporary time.
Yep.
Archie number one, written by Mark Waid, art by Fiona Staples.
And that somehow I had been hearing about an Archie reboot, and I was completely like, no, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. And you had the book, and I looked, I was like, Fiona Staples? Oh, yeah, I'm in. So that was the one thing. Mark Waid, definitely awesome.
Sure, that's a name you can count on.
But Fiona Staples, and what was it that we were saying right before the podcast started? It's
what I was saying?
Yeah.
It's weird to see Fiona Staples' artwork not doing Saga, because it's still very, stylistically, they're very similar.
From the very first page you see, you're like, yep, yeah, that is Fiona Staples.
Art.
Absolutely.
But it's weird, because we're in Riverdale,
yeah,
and there's not a dragon sucking himself off.
No, there's not a giant walking around with his genitals hanging in
yeah,
the face.
Yeah, like, there's no weird spider sex.
No, no, none of that, you know?
None of this insane stuff that's like, oh, well, that's now permanently etched into my brain.
Nope.
That's never coming out.
Even on a lighter side, there's no blood and gore, you know?
Yeah.
There's nobody stabbing anybody or shooting anybody. It's actually a discussion about being in high school,
yeah,
you know?
And I was really kind of curious how this would play out, because to me, Archie, as contemporary as they have tried to become, including more characters of minorities, including gay characters, all this stuff, it's never not felt like it was kind of in that wholesome 50s time, mm-hmm, and just like, meh, mm-hmm, what am I going to get out of that? So I was really curious how Mark Waid would preserve the purity of Archie,
right,
while trying to include the contemporary, you know, technology and,
right,
and stuff like that.
I think he nailed it. I think he really did, you know?
Not, of course, like I said, not reading Archie, so not being an Archie expert, I do feel like, oh, through the osmosis of pop culture, I do know who a good handful of these characters are, and they are still fairly, very well represented.
Yeah.
Archie's still kind of the very wholesome character who's just kind of trying to do the right thing, but is, you know, poor with girls and is conflicted at,
yeah,
any given time of the day.
And Betty is a good girl, so she's very good, but she is attractive, but she's not like the girliest girl that,
yeah,
you've ever run into.
She's wholesome,
know?
Girl,
yeah,
next door. There is one thing, though, and I have to complain to Mark Waid about when Archie is talking about when he's talking about Betty, and Archie is narrating to the reader.
Sure.
Which I don't know if that's a thing.
I've seen it before, okay, yeah, where you've got the character who is in the situation, but he's breaking the fourth wall and talking to the audience, and none of the other characters usually,
yeah,
hear him doing that.
So he's Zach Morrising it.
Sure.
That's,
yes,
how,
yeah,
I understand.
Okay, all right, that's good. I can see it.
He's going through a couple different scenarios and what thing is. And there's a line where Betty tells to Archie, how many times do I have to tell you to change the coolant?
Is that a thing that you do?
No,
okay,
that is not a thing that you do.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
You change the oil.
I knew that. I definitely knew that. You top off the fluids.
You can top off the fluids.
Yes.
You can top off the coolant because some of it just burns off.
Sure.
Or you have a leak and, you know, of course you got to fill it.
Yeah.
But you don't change coolant regularly.
Okay. That's not a thing.
This has nothing to do with anything in the book.
That's fine.
But sometimes you see a thing where like, well, that ain't right.
No, that's, I absolutely get that. I run across everyone,
so
I'm like, that's
is,
not a thing.
Is it totally took me out of the book. I don't believe this Riverdale exists.
Because I saw it, and I saw it. She's like, how many times have I told you to change the coolant? I'm like, well, that's the thing I wouldn't know how to do.
She must know about cars.
She knows about cars. It's, I believed it. That's fine. So I pay people to work on my car. I know how to do some stuff on my car, and I still pay people to do it, because it's a giant pain in the butt.
I mean, the art is gorgeous.
It's Fiona Staples.
Yeah.
It's really well done.
I don't know. Does she have a colorist on this? Because I know she does. Yeah, she's got a colorist. Oh, that's a lot of
names. Wow, there's a lot of consonants in there all in one.
Okay. It's worth it because I think the colors are really, really pretty in this book. Andre.
Mm-hmm.
Seismanowicz.
Szymanowicz?
Szymanowicz?
Maybe. Sorry, we're butchering that. Please write in and tell us. We'd love to hear from you.
I'm very sorry. You can come onto this podcast and we'll pronounce it correctly together.
I'm pretty sure he's probably had people butcher his name before.
But he hasn't always had a chance to come onto a podcast.
It's true.
Andre, anytime you like, buddy.
Yep.
With Jen Vaughn, who has a smaller title.
Wait, it's really tiny. Yeah. Yes. But you did good, too.
So. Yes, good job, you two. I know, the colors are really great. The art and the inking, I think, very much tell you it's Fiona Staples.
Yep.
But, like, even Jughead with his goofy hat, which is definitely not contemporary.
No.
Still, I think it's because you know it's Jughead. You know that's how Jughead's supposed to look.
Yeah, and it looks like a hat. It looks like a thing that you could wear, you know?
It plays out. I've actually, this reminded me, I've seen this hat in the wild.
Oh, no way, really?
I've seen this hat worn on a real person.
Hey, you know, it's a thing. It had to come from somewhere.
I was in Hillcrest.
Okay, Hillcrest can get away with some things that other areas of San Diego can't, but that's still, you know.
For the non-San Diego natives, Hillcrest is very much the artsy, liberal, very liberal scene of San Diego.
Very fabulous.
Yes, very, a lot of really great independently owned shops and restaurants and stuff like that. And so it's where you would see someone being avant-garde.
Yes.
A lot of the book is kind of the supporting cast talking about some lipstick incident
that's all they call it
that has broken apart Archie and Betty, who have been together. Apparently they've been together for a long time. At one point one character's like, if Archie and Betty can't make it, then what hope do I have?
And they're both like, Archie's talking to the viewer and he's talking about, look, I don't hate her, you know, we're not talking. It was nobody. He wouldn't explain.
Like nobody's fault.
But he said it was an atomic breakup, and I'm like, I'm familiar with those. So yeah, they're still not speaking, but they're not bad mouthing each other either. So we don't know what went on.
So I mean, I never thought I'd be willing to pick up two Archie books in a row, but I mean, the story still feels very wholesome.
Mm-hmm.
The supporting cast is like, okay, this is how we're gonna get Archie and Betty together. We're going to rig the homecoming votes so that they're king and queen, and that will force them into the position where everything works out.
They'll have to have a dance together, and after one dance, they won't
everything
be able to stay
will be
apart.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jughead is in it, and he's like, one, they're trying to buy him off with food, and he's like, you fucking vultures, get away from here.
Seriously, get out of people's business. God.
Yeah, he's very kind of the voice of reason.
Mm-hmm.
And smarter than I think he's ever been portrayed.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, the fact that he turned down food, this is not a Jughead we're really used to.
Yeah, usually that was a Scooby snack to him. Like, you just get him to do whatever he wants.
And then you've got Reggie, who's actually like, acknowledged to be a slime ball, but he did kind of pull Betty away from the people who were trying to like pester her for answers. But then again, he's probably trying to get up with her as well. So Reggie was actually
he was trying to show off his car.
And yeah, exactly. But at the same time, he did come to her rescue, kind of. You know, everybody was trying to get the details of the breakup out of her, and he came in. So Reggie, I think, is pretty like the Reggie that we know, but maybe you like him a little bit better.
But still, you know, like updated.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's interesting because I would think you can't have an Archie-type character. No one in Riverdale can possibly exist in our contemporary timeline because we're, as a society, just too jaded. We're too maybe pessimistic or too sarcastic.
Right.
That pure, wholesome souls like this just can't exist.
They were 1950s caricatures. Yes. So, yeah, it's hard to update that.
But, I mean, it works out. Like, yeah. I was really impressed. This story, you know, kind of continues. Jughead says that he's going to rig the votes so that, you know, it's a sure thing. We'll have Archie and Betty together.
Though he never actually says that. He just says, he's like, I volunteered to count those. I've got it handled. Yeah. I'm your man on the inside. So,
So we're to believe that's what he's going to do. But it turns out we see he burns the Archies.
Yeah.
To have Betty and some other random guy up there. And then which I feel is like, that isn't how the story would have originally gone.
No.
Originally, they'd been together,
yep.
And then things would work out, and then the new girl comes to town and things don't work out.
Exactly.
But
they
so
both,
I think,
it's nice because they both got their moments. He made sure that, you know, all the friends were trying to get Archie and Betty to be homecoming king and queen. She did get to be homecoming queen, mm-hmm. but Archie was just helping with band setup, and then the lead guitarist couldn't show up, so Archie got to be a lead guitarist. Yeah. So he got his shining moment as well. So they both had a nice moment together where they both got to see the other one in their elements. Yeah. So Jughead's, that was Jughead's plan from the beginning.
Jughead! Yeah. With a master plan!
Yeah, and it worked really well because he had asked somebody for a tube of superglue earlier on in the book, and I couldn't figure out why he was going to use a superglue.
Like, I thought we were going to go down, like, the huffing route or something. Jughead's got a huffing problem.
I thought it was going to be, like, he was going to stick the votes that he didn't want someplace, why he would do that and not just take them away. I don't know. I thought it had something to do.
Or something?
Something, but no, he put superglue all over the steering wheel of the lead guitarist's car so that the lead guitarist couldn't show up, so that Archie could. And I'm like, he really did have it all figured out.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But he makes a really good point of how uncomfortable and awkward it would have been forcing these two people who can't really talk to each other right now in the spotlight in front of everybody.
Yeah, to have a dance together by themselves.
And everyone else is like, oh, well, I guess we didn't think about that.
It's true. It's very true. Jughead's
this is the brains?
I know. This is not... They've definitely updated him, but Jughead probably got the best update, I think, out of anybody.
So. I think so. Maybe because that Scooby character just would really... It really wouldn't work in this book.
No.
Like, he's the one who had to travel the farthest.
Yeah.
And he's still, you know, crown-wearing, hamburger-loving, you know, kind of best friend of Archie. But now he's maybe the best friend that Archie needs.
Yeah.
And not the best friend that we would have seen just lay down on a grenade for no reason.
Exactly. He's a salt of the earth dude.
Yeah.
You know, that's what he is.
Yeah. So, guys, this book's been out, I think, 2 weeks now. I think this was in last week's stack.
Yeah.
But it had a million variants. There's got to still be one out there.
Yeah.
I'm willing to hang out with Archie for a while.
Yeah. If she's going to continue doing the art, even if the story hadn't been that good, I probably would have stuck with it for
it's kind of worth it for the art.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to see regular people.
No,
not crazy monsters.
I always thought the style of the original Archie art was actually, it was interesting. You know, it is a thing.
It updated well, you know.
Yeah, it's fine. But this is better. I like this
much
better. Yeah.
Absolutely. Old Man Logan kind of continues Old Man Logan across boundaries. And it seems weird. I'm kind of starting to forget why he even left his world, because now we just seem to be dominion hopping.
Yeah, because he keeps taking on Thors, and I guess when he takes on Thors, he tends to get dropped in other worlds every time he gets dropped. So
he's dropped into the Age of Apocalypse world, and Apocalypse is kicking his ass. And
you've definitely got some characters that are aware of all the different... I mean, obviously, Elsa in Zombies is aware that all these different worlds exist.
Yeah.
The Thors are aware. There's some characters who they know, you know, like... They know that there are other places that they're not supposed to go to. Logan is not aware of that, because Logan is constantly surprised by everything that he sees, and he doesn't understand why... He's seeing someone that he knows, but they have no idea who he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's just now getting a grasp on the fact that he's running into people that he thought he killed, and they're still alive, but they're not from his area. So, but it's taken him a while. So he was completely unaware that there were other worlds. He just knew about Lord Doom, and that's all he knew.
Pretty much.
Did he know about Lord Doom?
No, he did.
Okay, because I thought at some point...
I remember there was talk about that in the first book from other characers.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was a thing that he knew or not.
And in typical Wolverine fashion, he's like, well, fuck him, what's he done for me lately?
Yeah, true.
So he gets his ass beat by Apocalypse. He attacks another Thor. Some kind of... It kind of looked like Storm, but it wasn't Storm.
Yeah, it's...
Didn't have a nose.
Yeah, he keeps calling it the goat-faced one. I don't know where that came from. It was actually a beautiful character. I mean, she's all done... She's very alien, but
I didn't know who she was supposed to be.
Yeah,
but she did, like, crack some lightning down on him.
Oh, yeah, exactly. She kind of threw him off and then just set a lightning bolt through him. So,
yeah, after he practically eviscerated her.
Yeah. There was a great scene of him being dropped. I mean, it was quiet.
And it really showed the passage of time between how high he was and falling. Like, it's just panel, and then the from like up airplane's view where things are just patches of color.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of see streets, and then you can kind of see like the rubble of buildings. Yeah. And then you're kind of at the top of those buildings and you can see, you know, the definition of the, of what's below.
Yeah.
And he falls into Technopolis.
Yep. Yep. So now he's in Tony Stark's world.
Yeah. Now he's in the Armor Wars world.
Yep.
Shut up, Carr. And he has this whole conversation with Tony Stark Jr., essentially. Mm-hmm. It's not the Tony Stark.
Is it not? Because anytime they talked about his father, I was always wondering if they were talking about Tony Stark's father.
As I understand it, he's the son of Tony Stark.
Okay.
He's right. Tony Stark Jr., right. And then there's Anno Stark, who's his brother.
Okay.
And they're kind of talking back and forth. Tony Stark is discovering this Wolverine who he has no concept of any Wolverines.
No, there's no, it's not like.
But he's not dying from the virus that's in the air.
Right. But he did say that your body is fighting the virus to a standstill, but he also didn't believe it would be able to do that forever. So he's like, you need some armor. And Wolverine's like, can I have this? And he's like, no, that's mine. So, but you know.
Yeah.
He's getting lippy with
Rhodey.
Yeah, he is getting real lippy with this version, world's version of Rhodey. Who is Rhodey?
Is
Thor?
He is a Thor.
Okay. Right.
So, like, I'm kind of forgetting the fact that it was an Ultron head that flew out of nowhere that got him started, and now I'm just kind of curious what world he goes to next.
Yeah, yeah. We've seen him. We've seen him in the Apocalypse world. We've seen him in Technopolis. He, of course, had his original world that he was from.
And now it just feels like, okay, he won't be here long.
No, yeah.
He'll be in another world by midpoint in the next book.
Yeah, and he's been, you know, quote-unquote killed several times now, so he's still fighting it off. And he meets Boom Boom, Tabitha, of course.
The Age of Apocalypse Boom Boom?
I think so, yeah. But then I wasn't sure exactly what was going on in the Age of Apocalypse world, because there are definitely mutants that are fighting against each other. I think you have, like, X-Men mutants and non-X-Men mutants.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, I don't know, Apocalypse ended up taking on a Thor, because Apocalypse in no version of any kind of universe is ever going to kowtow to anybody, so that was probably going to happen.
Yeah, that was cool. Because at first, Apocalypse, because he understands kind of the hierarchies, like, All right, this is how it's going to be. And then the Thor kind of gets lippy with him or something.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, fuck it. He flips the table and starts going to town.
That's right.
So, to me, it's just a book about Wolverine exploring other worlds for us to see it from the angle that is not straight on.
Right, asking the questions that the reader would be asking.
Yeah.
So it's nice.
And we know Old Man Logan is going to live on to the next iteration of Marvel, so we'll see. I guess we'll see, you know, maybe if this book has something to do with that.
I know he's going to be our Wolverine after Secret Wars. Is he going to be our only Wolverine?
He's going to be the only Logan that we know of so far.
I know we've got X-23.
Yeah, she's the new Wolverine.
Right, right.
And old Wolverine will still, in typical Wolverine fashion, be in several different books.
Yes, yes.
Weird... Mm-hmm. Star Trek Green Lantern crossover.
Not a combination I would think of, but I don't know why. You know, because it actually, when you start reading it, you're like, this makes sense.
It just seems to make sense. Like, all right, yeah, they're both real space-heavy, you know, protectors of you know, the innocent.
This book, we've talked in this podcast before about how I have a real problem reading comic books that are about actual living people. Like, I could never read the X-Files books or a lot of the Star Trek books.
Where the art tries to emulate the real people.
Right, and you're supposed to, you know, a lot of the
Star Wars books were trying real hard.
A lot of the Doctor Who books do the same thing, where you've got that one woman whose name I can't remember, but I'll think of it and I'll put a link up. She does these excellent covers, but she does not do the interior art for the Doctor Who books, and the interior art's always so hit or miss. I'm like, you're either trying too hard or you're not trying enough. This book, I think, for the most part, hit that sweet spot where you know who they are, but they're not going hyper-realistic with all the lines on their face and everything.
You can tell it's a Chris Pine caricature.
Yes.
It's a Zachary Quinto caricature.
Yes.
Without trying to force in your face, look how close this is to the Earth!
It's Chris Pine! It's still... Because there is another IDW Star Trek book that I only read one issue. I was like, oh no, I'm sorry. Props to the artist. That must have been really hard to draw, but no.
But it's, I mean, it's interesting and okay, so the Guardian apparently he's the very last Guardian. Everyone else is dead. He's got the rings. He's being chased. He's like, fuck off to the thing that's chasing him. And he transports himself to another dimension.
Right.
The dimension of Starfleet in Star Trek. As to which apparently he dies immediately.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, when he transported and then we see him later, I'm like, and he's a corpse. Well, yeah. I guess maybe that didn't work as well as he thought, or maybe that was his intention. I don't know.
So, the Enterprise crew come across a rogue planet, which there was some fun back and forth about rogue and abandoned planets.
Yeah.
They decide to go down there, as to which they point out, why is the first officer and the captain away from the ship?
But that's such a Kirk thing to do. Totally.
But like, they're kind of pointing out some of these things that have always been kind of funny about Star Trek. And they find the Guardian, and they find all the rings.
Yep.
Now, I thought maybe it would just be like Green Lantern transports himself or something, explosion, whatever.
Sure.
And we would have like Hal and just Hal with the Green Lanterns.
Sure.
Or maybe like Hal and a Sinestro ring. Because right. you can't have Hal without another color ring anymore.
No.
But instead, it's the Guardians, all the rings. And Scotty's there checking them out. He's like, well, they're really advanced.
Mm-hmm.
There's some kind of conduit. I'm going to throw some tachyon beams on them. His little buddy is there making noises and stuff.
Yep.
And once they hit some tachyons, they start going crazy.
Yep. Meanwhile, you've got Bones checking out the corpse, and Jim wants to know what he's found out. And the first thing he says is, well, he's dead, Jim. And I'm like, yay!
That was fun. I feel it's really very tastefully playing
it was.
To all the jokes about Star Trek.
But it's true. It's a serious book, just with little like nudges and winks every once in a while. So it's not a parody.
Just some fun ribbing.
Yes,
exactly. For Star Trek fans.
Yes.
Klingons show up and everyone's all, oh no, what do we do? And the book more or less ends with the rings scattering out. Mm-hmm. Couple stay on the ship. One goes to the Klingon.
The yellow one, of course.
The yellow one and some other go out into space. And Hal Jordan appears, cloaking the Enterprise in his green shield and saying, hey, what up?
There you go.
And I just hear Nathan Fillion's voice in my head.
Oh, my God, yes. Yeah. Now, just for edification, because I don't always know what all the rings do. The yellow one's easy. The red one, I think, is rage, I guess.
Yes.
Purple one's love?
No. Pink is love.
Pink, got it.
So there's green.
Of course it is.
Green is will.
Right.
Yellow is fear.
Mm-hmm.
Blue is hope.
Okay.
Red is rage. Purple is compassion.
Oh, interesting.
And pink is love.
So we only have four rings that we know exactly what happens to them.
Yeah.
The yellow one goes to the Klingon. The blue one goes to
Chekhov.
The red one, that is red, right?
I think it's supposed to be pink.
Oh, okay. Because it looks kind of red.
Because that also makes the most... Yeah, all right. Because the text is kind of lavenderish.
Oh, okay, that's
I'm
right.
I'm going to say, yeah, it's probably that. Because also it's Uhura, and Uhura and Spock have the relationship, so I have to assume it's love.
Yeah, I can't imagine Uhura being rage.
Yeah,
I don't know who. And then Bones gets purple, which is a compassion, I guess.
Which is funny, because he's so grizzled, but at the same time, he's a doctor, and he really cares about
it's
healing
true.
People.
Yeah, he wouldn't have gone into a profession where he heals people if he didn't at least have a little bit of compassion.
Yeah,
So that was the divvying up the rings. So the green... Did the green one leave and go someplace else, or did it go back to Hal?
Is Hal, yeah. Okay. Like, Hal appears out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. He was inside the ring?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure.
I do find it surprising, though, that neither Kirk nor Spock got a ring.
I wonder if they did that just to be different, because you would almost always assume, like, if it was the rings going to the Transformers, you would assume that Optimus would get one of them. But what if he didn't? You know, Optimus would get one, and Megatron would get the other, but what if they decided,
that's
done,
a whole
you know?
DeviantArt thread that we need to find and or create.
Yeah, I think I've seen some of them. I've seen a green Optimus Prime before.
Okay.
It's cool. All yeah, right. Yeah, it's good.
But you know what? As goofy as it sounds, and I'm not really in on, crossovers that don't make sense, that feel very forced.
Yeah.
Like the Doctor Who Star Trek, I wasn't really interested in. I've heard a couple things, but not enough to get me to buy a book.
Yeah.
This one, for some reason, I'm like, all right, whatever.
It was fine last week.
It was kind of light. I can't seem to step out of the store anymore without buying a bunch of books.
Yeah.
But it was actually fun, and I'm really looking forward to number two.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah. I am too.
And lastly, we'll squeeze in real quick and briefly. Hawkeye, all new Hawkeye number four came out. Not to be confused with Remender's Hawkeye, which just ended, mm-hmm. Which I thought was actually already long over. But this is the Jeff Lemire, Ramon Perez, beautiful book.
Absolutely.
That we love so much with all the watercoloring that is also Perez's artwork. More or less here just because it's still beautiful.
Yeah, there's nothing like the worst thing I can say about it is exactly like the other books that have come before. Yeah. We've got the story of his past, which is nicely interspersed with images from the present, so there's always something going on in each one that's a callback to whatever is happening. So they tie together pretty nicely. The mutant kids that they picked up are being chased, but now when they got cornered and Katie was with them, they retaliated.
Yeah.
So it actually ends with a big explosion and we don't know what happens.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, if ever there was a book that was worth it just for the art alone,
yeah.
I think it is this one.
Yeah, the watercolors are really amazing.
And I keep forgetting that this is not a book I want to read digitally, but it's because sometimes I'm just tearing through books,
mm-hmm.
and I keep forgetting, this is a book you want to see the page.
Yes.
You want to look at everything.
Yeah.
Because it's, digitally it's just watercolor, other style, watercolor, watercolor, other style. And it goes back and forth, and they're pretty. They are still really pretty, but I think the scope is really there when you can see a whole page
laid out. Yeah, you're
so
right.
At least don't do the guided view.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because even the big watercolor pages, the guided view will divide it into, like, it'll look at this section of the watercolor and this, and it is really, like, you're
it's
exactly
like looking
right.
at, like, a Van Gogh with in pieces.
Exactly.
Not the way it's meant to be
You
seen.
Want to see the whole thing.
Yeah.
You really do.
So, yeah, just more gorgeous artwork, and it's cool to kind of see this very young Clint and learn. You see, I think what it is, it's like, we know all these things about Hawkeye. Mm-hmm. Now we see when those things blossomed. Like, oh, you're really good at archery, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because he's Hawkeye.
Yeah, exactly. Also, his brother keeps yelling at him at times. He's like, don't do that thing where you pretend you can't hear me. I hate that. And
yeah.
Like, oh, this is before we knew what was happening with him. And we see how his brother started on a path that wasn't necessarily great. So,
yeah, we see where the split's going to kind of come from.
Yeah.
So those are just some of the books that we got to read. Of course, there are many other books every week coming out. We cannot possibly read them all or talk about all of them on this podcast. So if you have anything that you have been reading that is amazing, that is awful, that you feel needs to be brought up on this podcast, please let us know. You can tell us on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Google Plus, Instagram.
I think that's it. We do have a DeviantArt group, by the way.
DeviantArt,
which we don't do much with it, but people do submit things to it every once in a while. So there's always new art showing up in there. So
you know, artists out there, submit.
Yep,
we'll put you in there.
Yep.
In the group thing.
I had to change it to you can submit, I think, 2 pictures a month or something, because we had one person who does a lot of great stuff, but every single day I was getting 6, and I'm like, I have to let other people get in there too. It's okay. Your stuff is great.
Yeah.
I don't want you to feel bad, but just so that you know.
So yes, also that, or you can email us any of your thoughts or anything like that to our email address, comicissues@gmail.com. And very exciting news, everybody. Another Comic Issues live show is coming up the 22nd of August. So this podcast is in August? Or
This podcast is still in July.
Still in July. All right, so just a few weeks away, we'll be having a show at NerdCon, which will be in Escondido, California. Again, August 22nd at 12:30, we'll be having our very own live show, which I don't have the full schedule. We might be following up our favorite psychologist, Jeanine Scarlett.
Oh, no way. Oh, good. We get to see her again. That's awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Actually, she may be coming onto the podcast again soon,
too. Oh, good. Yeah, good. Excellent.
It's a one-day convention, so, you know, the price is very fair. They've got all kinds of panels, stuff going on. They've got vendors. They've got stuff, and I'm flipping through trying to give you all the information that I have. cosplay panels, competitions, all kinds of great stuff.
another chance to go to like a hometown convention. If maybe you're needing to wind down a little bit from the craziness of WonderCon and Comic-Con, this is more for our hardcore nerds, you know?
So if you're in the general Southern California area, because Escondido is not too far south. It's about a half an hour drive, even for us around the convention.
South or north?
North.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, we're going to have to go north.
Okay, all right.
If you're in the Orange County area or anything like that, come on down. It's guaranteed to be a fun convention. We did the Crane Con back in fall, one-day convention. Still tons of fun.
Very much so.
Everyone just kind of shows up. They're curious. They have no real agenda like you do with conventions.
You don't have to wait in line to buy a ticket.
It's not a raffle.
No, you're not going to be trampled by hordes of hundreds of thousands of people. You'll be able to interact with people.
We'll be there. You can talk
to us. You can buy us a drink. We'll let you.
We'll let that happen.
Yes.
So again, NerdCon, August 22nd. We'll be there with all kinds of tons of other cool stuff. This is the very first NerdCon that's going on. So we're very excited to be on the ground floor of this, because already it's looking to be very well put together and is looking to be a lot of fun.
Good.
So that's happening, guys. Put it on your calendar. Be there. I'll throw candy at you. I think it's a thing for me now.
Yeah, it works. You know what? Throw candy. That's fine.
I did, Ashley and I, we did a panel at GamerCon.
Yes.
For Two Geeks and a Podcast, and I brought candy. You know, just hucking it into the audience.
I heard about that. I heard it works very well. You know, it's either... All right, so if you make it rain, you're throwing money at people. What do you call it if you're throwing candy at people?
Let's see.
It's got to be a clever name for it. Because, you know, Dana Tosh always talks about, you know, you make it rain by throwing money at hoes. You make it hail by throwing change at sluts. Yeah, so what do you do when you throw candy at nerds?
Throwing diabetes.
I don't know. Making it. All right. We've got rain. We've got hail. Sleet. Snow.
If I bring like snowballs.
Okay,
like
that's right.
Like hosts snowballs, I can make it snow.
There we go. That's all right.
If I only deal in white chocolate.
Okay, that's it.
I could make it snow.
I think we need to make this a thing.
Okay, we'll come up with some. Stephen Henry.
Yeah, please come up with a name for this for us. Yeah, you know, and all the things that we can throw that we're allowed to throw if we're going to do
this. When I throw
this,
candy into the audience, what do we call it? Okay, so that is it this week, everybody. Be sure to check out our continuing podcast and Comic-Con coverage on the website, as well as everything else, part of PixelatedGeek.com. Our sweet goodness is on comic-issues.com, which is under Pixelated Geek, so you can go to one and still get us.
Yes.
You just also get all the video game and movie news that the site is doing.
Yes.
So go there, check it out on the daily, guys. Until next week, I'm Anthony Silva.
Elizabeth Wallace.
And good geeking.